I'm going to today. So the title of my sermon is, Does the Truth Really Matter? Or the title of my message. I hate it when I call it a sermon because that's preachy. A message is something that you can hear and something that you can use and something more light, I think. So what is the truth anyway? The world we live in is packed with information. Some of it is true, some of it is not. I think that everybody can agree with that. It has really turned me off to talk radio and news. News is oftentimes delivered, written in a way to lead you to think in a particular way. Here's an example, and I have no political intention in this example or anything. It's just an example. Sometimes I hear on the news, an unarmed black man was shot and killed by police. While on another report, I would hear, police shot and killed a man during an altercation. It's the same story told differently. Why would race be a part of the newscast is what's going on in my mind. What was the race of the second man that was mentioned? It didn't say. So those things are going through my mind when I'm listening to the news. And on top of that, I never heard of a man without arms. So, you know, that's my attempt at a joke. So presumably, race would be mentioned to incite people to react. And you can see through the history of relatively recent news that that's been pretty effective when we had the incident with the guy that was kneeled on his neck that brought up a lot of things. I don't even remember his name, but presumably race is brought up and things like that just to incite people to react in a certain way. I call this tilted news. So you can hear the news, and sometimes it's tilted to make you think in a way that maybe is true, but they want you to think of something else rather than what the story is. It's hard for me to navigate through this kind of news. The political bickering that's going on right now for the two major parties. Which one is wrong, Hamas or Israel? Who is the bad guy, Ukraine or Russia? Depends on what news you listen to. You get either. Even fake news, that's a thing now, fake news. No wonder I listen to such wonderful music instead of talk media. Anybody that rides with me in the truck gets to a sample of the great music I listen to. Media is crazy. One time I heard that someone was actually shot in the belly button. Can you believe that? Can you imagine that would even be in the media? With what we hear, read, and see in the media, what is the truth? That one was true because I got a picture with the statement that somebody was shot in the belly button. What is the truth after all those things that we read, hear, and see? And I say see, you didn't used to be able to say that, but I watch kids. In fact, on midweek, I put a basket on the table now for phones to go in because it's too hard to do a class when a kid has a phone in their hand. So we got the offering plate out, but with the phones in the offering plate, we have class because there is a lot to see. The media is a big thing. Look at this YouTube video. You know, it's a cat that chases a string or something. You know, whatever it is, there's a lot of things out there for us to see that really take our minds off of all the things that really matter. So what is the truth? Does it even matter? Whatever happened to Just the Facts, ma'am? Does anybody know that show? What was it? Dragnet. See that? Just the Facts, ma'am. That's telling the story. You're telling the story. You're not trying to make people think of something else other than the story. So I have, if Ben would come forward, I'm going to call it a skit. I don't know. You can stand up there. You know what this is? Anybody know what it is? Yeah, it's yarn. Does it have an end? Oh, yeah, it does. You want to hold on to the end? You want to come up here? No, yeah, I need to be behind you. Okay, thanks. Okay, so this is called The Lie, all right? Once there was a boy named Ben, and in actuality, the story came out with a boy named Ben, so I chose Ben. And I have changed the story to fit appropriately to match his situation some. One day, when Ben's parents were away, Ben was babysitting his little brother, Brooklyn, who was 2 years old. All of a sudden, Ben began to feel hungry. He looked around for something to eat. His mother kept nuts and chocolate chip on a shelf in the cupboard. She had told Ben he must never go into things that were on her baking shelf. When his mother returned, she noticed that her chocolate chips were half gone. I don't know. You know how she knew? She was going to go get some chocolate chips, too. And they were half gone. That's how she knew. Well, when she came back, she noticed that her chocolate chips were half gone. Ben, did you get into the chocolate chips? She asked, and Ben felt uncomfortable. I don't know how you look when you feel uncomfortable. He knew that if he told the truth, he would be punished. Ben needed a way out of this mess. Ben said, "No, Mom, it was Brooklyn." She's two. She can get up on the baking shelf. Yeah. I'm sorry. I didn't watch it more closely. Notice I didn't change the gender. Ben's mother said, "There will be no cookies for either of you this week. I'm sorry this happened." It's a yarn. He got one wrap of a yarn. Ben ran outside to play. He felt relieved. He needed a way out. He had found one. A lie had saved him from being punished. In the next few weeks, Ben used lie after lie to help him avoid trouble. He was trying to get out of that in the first place there. So one day, Ben broke a rule by going to the drugstore during recess. Ben. He was late getting back to class. "Where have you been?" asked Ben's teacher. "What's your teacher's name, Ben?" He forgot her name because he's never there. So, "Where have you been?" asked Ben's teacher. "Nowhere," Ben said. Emily giggled. "I'll bet you went to the store." "I did not," said Ben. "I lost my bouncy ball and I was trying to find it." Page two. In the days that followed, Emily began to tell on Ben when he did things wrong. He lied more and more often. Uh-oh, he's almost caught in the thing. He lied more and more often. He was telling yarns. One day he said, "All of my troubles are Emily's fault." That's that girl in school. "I wish she would keep her mouth shut." Now Ben was lying to himself. He was only saying that because she was pointing out what he was doing wrong. Ben was always in trouble. "Everyone picks on me," he thought, and then he began to feel sorry for himself. Ben's self-pity justified many things. He teased Emily and called her ugly names. At least he didn't call her ugly. He just called her ugly names. So Ben had a little bit of goodness left in him. He stole money from the pocket of a first grader's coat. He copied Julie's paper during a test at school, and both of them failed. Imagine that. Ben felt more and more unhappy. Do you know what the story is here, the moral of this story? One lie always leads to another. How quickly we can become trapped by our lies. Kind of like a web and a spider. You get wrapped up in a web. I want you to notice that Ben is not free. He's tangled and ensnared. Have you ever heard the phrase, "The truth will set you free"? The truth is what keeps us from being wrapped in a web of lies. Thanks, Ben. So that was a little illustration about yarns. Thanks, Ben. Everybody give Ben a hand. So, if I go forward this way, I should have slide one. Proverbs 18:7 says, so the right arrow is forward, right? Okay. Proverbs 18:7 says, this is NASB, a fool's mouth is his ruin, his lips are the snare of his soul. We noticed that while Ben was going through being wrapped in lies, a lot of the stuff came from himself and things that he said or did, something like that. And it says that his lips are the snare of his soul. That's a lot of S alliteration going on there. So that made me think, you kids aren't going to know what a snare is. So I got an online pic of a snare and how it works. We have an engine. Some people call it a tree. And we have a leader line, a hook, a base, a noose in the ground, of course. And you can see what would happen. So if a thing gets right in there, either an arm or a leg or a head, and it unhooks that hook right there, what do you think would happen?
It would die.
Yeah, it would die. The tree would straighten out and it would snatch whatever it is up off the ground. I used a cartoon form because sometimes in the news pictures or the snare pictures, they're pretty graphic. So I chose one that was cartoonized to not scare little kids. So that's what a snare is. So the lie is a snare to our being, our whole self. It says in there, the lips are a snare to, they can be a snare to your soul. A snare, like Brooklyn said, is meant to kill its victim. So you need to think about that for a minute. It's not to catch it or maim it, it's to kill its victim. That's what a snare is for. So one of the good things about God is he doesn't change. James 1:17 says, every good thing is given and every perfect gift is from above, coming down from the Father of lights, with whom there is no variation or shifting shadow. And my key in that verse is, there is no variation. God is a constant. Unlike man and his media, there are no tricks with God. There's not a lie to try to make you think something else. He comes straight out and brings his message to you. There are no tricks. He's the one constant that we can have, if we will. So that's something that we have to incur, is to seek after God. God's people are known for telling the truth and people and having good practices of honesty. Or they're known for telling the truth as people right from the beginning. In the Bible, a good place for a truth with consequence is found in Genesis. Remember every time we have a learning segment, it's time for a learning segment. Did you know that there is a city in New Mexico called Truth or Consequences? You never know when you're going to need to use that in a trivia game or some other little tidbit of useless information. I never knew that. But if you pay attention to when I speak, you will learn something. That's one thing. There's a city in New Mexico called Truth or Consequences. It was supposed to go off. It was still supposed to go off. Okay. The Genesis story that I'm referring to is about the first family of Israel. Well, back when I said there's a good account in Genesis about the truth or something like that. And I mean Jacob. Israel proper. Jacob's name was changed to Israel. So the children of Israel are actually Jacob's children. So this is a story about Jacob and his 12 sons. If this passage were a movie, it would be an emotional thriller. The storyline comes from Genesis 42 into Genesis 45. So it's a long storyline. And I'm encouraging you to read that this week, Genesis 42 to 45, all in a row, and notice the character that these men had. They had particular character. Also realize that their father, Jacob, taught them how to be. I know we mentioned in the class today that a lot of people don't have good teaching because they grew up in bad situations. But we need to notice and realize that what we see in this story, those kids, what they learned, their father taught that to them. That's something that we need to pay attention to as parents. He taught them how to be, doing truth. Can you imagine that? He actually taught them. If you didn't know these chapters, it's the story of how Israel got into Egypt in the first place. I'm sure you remember how they got out 430 years later. You probably remember that story, right? Well, this is the prequel. Jacob and his sons were needing food. Canaan and everywhere else was in severe famine. Joseph, the dreamer, was long gone from the family and presumed dead by his brothers and father. It turns out he happened to be in charge of all the food in the world. He wasn't dead at all. They thought he was dead, but he wasn't. He was in charge of all the food in the world. Their world, anyway. Any nation around was in famine. You know the story of Joseph and the warehouses and the dream and the 7 years of famine, the 7 years of plenty. The story is full of twists and turns and unexpected surprises. Even Joseph playing on their honesty. Of his brothers, of the 11 brothers. He knew that they were honest because he was one of them, even though they didn't know it was him at the time. Here are a few verses that showcase their character. I wanted to read just a verse here and there out of the story. I'm not going to read that whole story. That's your homework. But it is a very intriguing story. So in 42, verses 9 through 12, it says, Joseph remembered the dreams which he had about them, and he said, "You are spies." This is when the brothers first come to Egypt to buy food. "You are spies, and you have come to look at the undefended parts of our land." He knew who they were. They didn't know who he was. They said to him, "No, my lord, but your servants have come to buy food. We are all sons of one man. We are honest men, servants, your servants, not spies." They're admitting that they're honest people. They're going to tell the truth no matter what happens. And later on in 26 to 28, or 17 to 19, it says, "So he put them in prison for 3 days. Now Joseph said to them on the third day, 'Do this and live, for I fear God.'" This is Joseph talking to his 11 brothers, or 10. "If you are honest men, let one of your brothers be confined in your prison, but as for the rest of you, go home and take this grain to your different families, so that they can have some food during his famine." So he held one brother in prison while the other ones went home as a ransom, maybe. So in 42:26 to 28, it says, "So they loaded their," they got out of prison, the few of them, the ones still in prison. "They loaded their donkeys with grain and departed from there. As one of them opened his sack to give his donkey fodder or food, at the lodging place, he saw money, and behold, it was in the mouth of the sack. And he said to his brothers, 'My money has been returned, and behold, it's even in my sack.' And their hearts sank. They turned trembling to one another, saying, 'What is this that God has done to us?'" They were scared for their lives because they just got food. They opened their sack. "They're going to know that we stole this money." So if they were going to lie, this would be a good time to start thinking something up to get out of this problem, because I'm sure since Joseph was the second command in Egypt, he could have had him killed at any moment. And they knew that. Let's go on to chapter 43, verses 6 and 7. It says, then Israel said, they got back home, they got their food, they dished it out, but there's one of them still left in prison, if you remember that. Then Israel said, which is Jacob, why did you treat me so badly by telling the man that you still had another brother? If you read the story, then you'll find out that there's another factor in the story. But they said, the man questioned us particularly about our relatives, saying, is your father still alive? Do you have another brother? So we answered his questions. Could we possibly know that he would say, bring your brother down to Egypt, since they were north? So they're requiring that their brother come and see him, Joseph was, as the food master in Egypt. And the story goes on. And in 43:18, it says, now the men were afraid, the 11 or 10, they were afraid because they were brought to Joseph's house after they got back to Egypt to pick up their brother. They were brought to his house and they said, is it because of the money that was returned in our sacks the first time that we were being brought in, that he might seek occasion against us and fall on us and take us as slaves or even kill us and take our donkeys? Is that why we happen to go to his house? They're treating us special. Now I know there's something up. And in chapter 44, you may remember in the story that Benjamin had the silver cup planted in his bag. He opened up they gave him the food, they took off. Joseph says, hey, flag those guys down. They go down there and say, you guys stole something. Oh, no, we didn't. We didn't steal anything. And he opens the bag and the silver cup. And Joseph told him ahead of time, whoever has it, everybody else can go, but whoever has it is going to stay and be my slave. So it turned out to be in Benjamin's bag. And Judah steps up at that point when they find him and they find the silver cup, and he offers himself instead for his father's sake. Don't take Benjamin. That'll kill my father. Take me. And then let the young one go. Judah did that. That's kind of a pattern for the future, isn't it? Judah had a sacrificial son. This one was offering his sacrifice for his brother. So it's kind of a pretty good analogy that maybe you wouldn't see in this story. That's in chapter 44. Then in 45, verses 3 to 5, a lot of stuff happens. And Joseph finally can't take it anymore. He's going to reveal that he's the one, that he's his brother. When Joseph said to his brothers, I am Joseph, is your father still alive? But his brothers could not answer him, for they were dismayed at his presence. They're just now beginning to realize that it's their brother. Three chapters later. Then Joseph said to his brothers, please come closer to me. And they came closer. And he said, I am your brother, Joseph, whom you sold into Egypt as a slave. Now do not be grieved or angry with yourselves because you sold me here, for God sent me before you to preserve life. As a side note, can we think of any other occasion where God uses a bad situation in the scriptures? You can see he uses a bad situation and turns it into good. He does it all the time, if you read through. So sometimes we are down on ourselves, but God oftentimes takes a bad situation and turns it into good. How many other Bible stories can you think of that this kind of thing happened? When I read this story, honesty and truth stand out to me in these chapters. The honesty that the brothers had, even in bad situations, they told the truth when it would have been hard to do. And remember your assignment. Read Genesis 42 to 45 and get the whole story, the rest of the story. These men had plenty of opportunity to lie to Joseph or to Jacob. Jacob was in Israel up north. Joseph was in charge at Egypt. They could have lied to either end, but they didn't. They were honest, good people. Remember, they already did the lie with the coat of many colors. Remember that story, right? Maybe they learned something when they did that, when that all happened. Even with Joseph testing them, their honesty was their salvation. You have to think about that. They were starving. Being honest saved them. They were able to move down to Egypt and have plenty of food. So in this case, I have to say, yes, the truth does matter in this story. It definitely does. It's how God started his people. The children of Israel are God's chosen people. This is that first family, the 12 brothers and their father, actually Israel, Jacob. And let's not forget, 430 years later, Moses comes onto the scene and he receives commandments from God. Number 9 says, you shall not bear false witness. That's one of the 10. Be honest. In other words, you must tell the truth. People sometimes argue that the 10 commandments are negative. I just gave it to you positively. You must tell the truth. You might think this is odd, but I was inspired to do this message from reading Proverbs 11. It's funny how the Bible makes you think of the Bible, but it did. I read it while I was getting my oil changed in my truck. And when you're sitting there for the whatever time, it's good to use your time wisely. So I got my phone Bible out and I was reading, and I read Proverbs 11. For some reason, I chose that when there was a reason. That's another assignment. Read Proverbs 11. It's not very long, but this one you can't just read through and make a story like the other one. You can read fast because you want to know what's going to happen next. This is one that you read and you go slowly and you actually think about what you're reading, or you study it, the scenarios in each verse, because each verse has several scenarios that you think about. Oh, it pricks your mind and you think of this or you think of that. Believe it or not, verse 9 is the one that I chose, or that caused me to write this. And verse 9 says, with his mouth, the godless man destroys his neighbor. And I think that's what it's talking about. It's talking about lying and not being honest and not being good people. That's how you can destroy your neighbor, with your mouth. But through knowledge, the righteous will be delivered. That's a big sentence. Knowledge has to do with our deliverance. Their honesty in the story of Genesis 2 to 45 was their salvation. So this is kind of on that same line, but through knowledge, the righteous will be delivered. It says knowledge, that's how we're delivered. We need to know what God's truth is. The only way we can do that is to read the scriptures, pray, commune. That's how you find God's truth, or you find the truth. Truth and consequences is how this world was changed. Look at our beginning, the beginning of mankind. Yes, Adam and Eve and the serpent, that beginning. Truth and consequences. Man would not believe God's truth. At the very beginning, man would not believe God's truth. We had this. Would you look at that? I stuck with the cartoon theme on a few slides. Doesn't it look to you like Tarzan and Jane a little bit instead of Adam and Eve? Can anybody go, oh, like Carol Burnett? I can't that well. I used to when I was younger and my voice would move a little bit, but not anymore. So this is the picture of perfection in this artist's rendition. So Evie, can you come up for a second? I'm choosing Evie because Adam and Eve, Evie is the closest thing we have to Eve here. So you want to come up here? This is a little bit of a similar illustration as Ben's. You want to face that way? You want to hold this? Do you want to hold the yarn? So Eve isn't thinking this on her own. No, Eve.
You won't really die. You don't know what you're talking about. If you eat this fruit, you're going to be smart as God. You know the story, don't you? She's being wrapped up by lies and entangled in a web of lies. And she didn't think of it, somebody else did. That's the difference between Evie and Ben in these two illustrations. Someone else can affect your snareability or your snaring. So it's important that we try to find out what that truth is and not get wrapped up in someone else's lies. Okay, thanks, Evie. Eve. Yeah, you want to untangle it too. I tried to before. So Eve was manipulated by someone else's lies and ensnared and webbed into their lies. At some point, you'd have to take responsibility yourself. I understand that. But these lies can come from the outside. So when it began, we had this. Bliss, Tarzan and Jane, or Adam and Eve, whatever you want to call them. It was Adam and Eve. But because, I'm saying we, because we're part of mankind too, just as Adam and Eve were the beginning of it. We had the beginning of Israel, now we have the beginning of man. We have to say we. Because we did not believe God's truth, now we have this. Oh my goodness. Look how many. It's full of graves. Because they would not believe God's truth. Man was condemned, you know that story as well. All men are punished. I didn't choose a cartoon because I couldn't find a good one. But all men are punished because of that first sin, which was not really believing God, not believing the truth of God. That's kind of dismal, isn't it? A little bit dismal. The truth mattered enough that God altered his creation. It mattered to God. That seems like a big thing to me. It's not a small little thing. Knowing what the real truth is a big thing. We have probably heard the verse that Jesus quoted to Satan. Remember that story in the New Testament, Matthew 4, in that area? Man cannot live by bread alone, but by every word that proceeds out of the mouth of God. So we need to listen to God's word and pick out what he says is truth, not what we think is truth, or what somebody else tells us is truth. We need to pick out from God's word, from his mouth, to decide what is the truth and what isn't the truth. God's truth offers life. Just like the truth of Israel was offered salvation, it gave them salvation. God's truth offers life, which is salvation as well. The devil is called the father of lies in John 8:44. And Revelation 21, verse 8 has a little hard spot too. It says, those that are liars are included in this list. It says, their part will be in the lake of fire. That's talking about liars as one item. There are many other things too, murderers and things like that. Their part will be in the lake that burns with fire and brimstone, which is the second death. And if we had listened to Carter's verses when he started the service, there is a way that the second death has no power over us. That's to belong to Christ. It's bigger than the verses he read, but that's basically what he read. There is a thing that we can do that gives us power away from that second death. We don't have to stay dead. We don't have to be judged and killed. Maybe that's where the phrase comes from, liar, liar, pants on fire. I don't know. Maybe. I like to think so. Did you ever hear that? Liar, liar, pants on fire. Maybe that's where it comes from. Fear not. God's truth also includes a resurrection for those who seek to do God's truth. And I made it a verb. If you look up truth, it's a noun. But it is a verb too, in my English. You can argue me all you want, and I won't know what you're talking about because I'm not that great at school. You thought math was my only bad subject. So was English. There is a resurrection included for those who do seek for God's truth and his righteousness. That might bring you to think of Matthew 6:33. It should. It did me. We can have this. That's a 50s picture, isn't it? Guy's coming out of the ground. That's a resurrection. I chose these because visually, you can read and read and read your read, but when you see it, it makes a different impression to me when I see it. The visuals help to understand the story and understand the problems and understand the promises. And that's something you don't see. So if you don't see a picture, it seems like it's impossible, but God's truth says it is possible. A resurrection. Resurrection means to stand again. Remember in the garden, we had the picture of Eve and Jane, or Tarzan? No, we had the picture of Adam and Eve. They were standing, they were enjoying life, they were having fun. In my second one, it was a graveyard because they didn't believe God's truth. They were lying down. Resurrect means to stand again. So I chose the picture of the man standing, coming out of the grave. That's what resurrect means, stand again. We were standing, we weren't, we are. That's the promise of God's truth. We're going to close with some more of God's truth because it matters. So the answer to my initial question, does the truth really matter? Yeah, I think it does. And I think the Bible shows that it does. In John 5:25, which is a verse I want to read to you. You can look it up if you want. It's John 5:25 if you're doing notes. But it's not one that's popular resurrection verse, but I liked it. Truly, truly, I say to you, an hour is coming and now is when the dead will hear the voice of the Son of God, and those who hear it will live. It's a perfect picture of that resurrection from John 5:25. That's the words of Jesus. Truly, truly, that means it's true. That's God's truth. I say to you, an hour is coming and now is when the dead will hear the voice of the Son of God, and those who hear it will live. His voice will wake you up and you'll be able to stand again. So let's close with song number 79. Let's stand as we sing. And I'd like to remind you.